Hey, what's up, guys? My name is Cherno. Welcome back to the Cherno podcast, the podcast that we do every now and then when we have a special guest in town, which we do today. His name is Bargy.
Hello.
And he'll be talking about why he's making the switch from Unity to Hazel.
Exactly. Yeah. Today I've decided this is it.
Right now.
after seeing Studio Cherno, it's been a life-changing experience.
So, Bargy, for those of you who don't know who you are, you have a YouTube channel. What do you do?
Basically just make stupid games, make videos on the games. That's about it. I mean, we are working on a proper one now, which is called GoPogo. It's like the pitch we're using is it's like Mario Kart and Pogo Sticks. You play as these animals, lots of like ragdoll physics, really goofy. And that one we're actually planning to turn into like a fully fledged, like sell it, all that stuff.
Yeah, cool. So, do you have any kind of timeline for that, or is it just kind of rolling around?
We're trying not to like say anything because we keep promising and then we keep extending, so we don't want to say exactly when, but it shouldn't be, it's definitely going to be this year, like at some point.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
that's pretty quick. When did you start working on it?
It's been a weird development because we started on it in like June, but that was really early prototyping. Just like, we basically had the idea for the pogo stick. So it was, you move your cursor around, or like your mouse around, and you lean in the direction that you're kind of in motion.
Right.
So if you're moving your mouse to the left, the pogo stick starts to lean towards the left. And that was the idea we had for the movement originally. Mm-hmm. And so that it was, we prototyped that in like June, and then we were like, this is cool, we could do something with this. And then slowly we started to build it up. We had like, my business partner Timothy was like working on it, on, you know, just the prototype for the next few months, like, you know, on the side. And then in November we were like, let's actually do this, let's make a full thing. And yeah, so that's kind of
cool.
Since then,
did that idea come out of like a game jam, or was that just prototyping like for fun?
I can't remember.
It's quite an interesting idea, like pogo sticks. Like,
yeah,
that pogo sticks, that's like that stick that you put your feet on, like little platforms, and you jump on it, right?
Yeah.
I think have you actually used one in real life?
I bought one for a video for a bit.
Okay.
After this, where I like went to try it and then just smacked into my fridge.
Yeah, like I'm just like curious. Like,
they're really hard.
I have, yeah.
Really? Okay, pogo sticks.
They're difficult.
Maybe I should get a pogo stick. Because I just remember this one memory from my childhood of some, like, one of the kids on the street had one lying around, and that's all I, like, when I hear pogo stick, I just, that little memory is just in my mind, and that's it. But yeah, because I feel like they're not that popular these days.
No.
Kids these days.
No.
So when did you start like your game dev journey in general, and what did you start with?
Was it 2018, 2019? I think it was the end of the beginning of 2019. So at the time I was still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like basically just coming home and playing video games all the time, and I was like, I kind of wanted to do something productive, but I didn't know what. And then I was like, game dev, why not?
Yeah.
And so I started like searching YouTube, whatever, came across Blackthorn Prod.
Mm-hmm.
And he just released like a Udemy course, which was like, I think it was like a 2D, it was like an endless runner, but you were like, there was meteorites falling down and you were on a static screen. You had to move left and right and dodge them.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've seen that. So I made a game called Knife Storm, which was just the same thing but with knives dropping in like 2 days.
That was your first ever game?
First ever game. I dabbled like when I was like,
and did
13.
You make that in Unity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried like Game Maker years before, but to the, you know, like opening up a YouTube tutorial and then just following it word for word and then giving up. So it wasn't like a big part up until then.
Yeah.
And then I did that in 2 days. Obviously, I had no idea what I was doing, like just basically copying the code and then like, you know, trying to figure some stuff out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, all right, it's time to make a real game. I'm good enough now.
Yeah.
So I then started on a game called Chicken Slapper, which is based on, there's like the idea that if you slap a chicken, how many times you have to slap a chicken to cook it?
To cook it, yeah.
So I was like, that would make a cool clicker
game.
That
was like someone on YouTube made that machine, right?
Oh, the machine.
Yeah,
yes.
I think someone made a machine that just rotates and slaps the chicken.
Yeah. I did a thing, is it?
Oh, yeah.
I think he's Australian.
Yeah, he's Australian. Yeah, I watched his video.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
He's hilarious. Maybe it was him. Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't know. Yeah, Jamie, that pull that up. No, it was...
So you made a game like that?
Yeah, it was just a clicker game on mobile. And then...
I slapped it. What would you call it?
Chicken Slapper.
Chicken Slapper. It should be
Louis Wise.
Chicken by slapping simulator.
Yes, this guy.
Louis Wise. I cooked a chicken by slapping it.
He did it.
Louis. That's hilarious. Sponsored by HelloFresh.
Yeah, cut this bit out.
Cut that out. Yeah, okay, so you made a game like that.
Yeah, so I made that, and then I put it on mobile and told all my friends to download it at school or whatever. And
yeah,
then
right.
That was cool, like actually getting feedback.
See, that's like, to be honest, like one of the most annoying things of my career, I guess, making kind of games more or less usually from scratch, is the fact that like at no point was I able to just quickly release a game on mobile. I mean, mind you, like when I made my first game, well, my first ever game was probably 2006, but my first kind of more or less game when I knew what I was doing and could program and stuff was like in 2012.
Right.
And like, I guess mobile gaming wasn't like that big then. I wouldn't remember. 2000, like Angry Birds and stuff was around. Maybe some weird like Call of Duty first person clones that no one ever actually played because it was just terrible. But like, yeah, I was never able to really just export a game to run on mobile. And I feel like that's really cool, like these days, I guess, with engines like Unity, where you can just be like, I can get everyone in my year level easily to play it. I mean, we all had laptops though, so I guess it's not that big of a difference, like getting someone to download and play a game on a laptop versus mobile. But it's just cool how it's like so much more accessible now.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. So yeah, I mean, I released that and then kind of moved on, and just the next year I was kind of just like dabbling and trying to make stuff, but not finishing anything, just like, you know, trying to build up my skills or whatever.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened, and then all of a sudden I had nothing to do. So
it's a blessing in disguise.
It really was. I remember thinking at the time, I was like, I'm gonna look back on COVID so like fondly, just because of, you know, like it gave me the time
probably
to just
change your life. Yeah.
Yeah, it gave like, me the time to just do this all the time.
Yeah.
And so it was the next like, well, how long was COVID? Like probably 6-7 months of just grinding away.
Yeah.
And
what were you doing to better your skills there? Were you just repeatedly making like new, fleshing out ideas, or
that was a weird
reading
time.
Docs, tutorials.
It was weird because that was like the time where I wanted to try other technologies. So I wasn't just doing Unity like during that, like, because I kind of wasn't sure whether I wanted to go into games or like typical programming. So at that point I was trying everything. I was doing like all different types of programming, like trying like SFML, SDL, just trying all these different technologies. But I can't remember if I actually released a game towards the end of that or during lockdown. I don't think I did. Maybe a couple of H.io games.
Oh, that was probably when you made that C++ Asteroids game for your channel, yeah?
No, that was December that year.
That's
interesting because that's kind of where...
You were dabbling around in different technologies around then, yeah?
Yeah, so then I made my YouTube channel at the end of that.
Okay.
And that's kind of, I made the Asteroids game.
Yep.
And then that kind of didn't do that well at first, but then like 3 months later, it just went. And that was the video that kicked it off. And then since then, I've kind of just been doing Unity stuff and focusing on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, because I feel like, interestingly enough, because, you know, I release a lot of videos, I guess, with C++ in the title, and then that video had C++ in the title. That was probably the first video of yours I found, even though I probably found it like a few years after you released it.
Yeah, yeah.
But because the algorithm showed me that video because it thought I was interested in C++, then I found like the rest of your videos as well.
So, yeah.
Got it. It's nice to, in a way, dabbling in different technologies is actually a really good marketing strategy.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, they're all similar. Like,
yeah.
Because the thing is with my videos as well is I try not to make them too technical. I did back then.
Yeah.
But now it's like there's hardly ever any code on the screen or anything like that.
I've started doing that like with devlogs as well.
Yeah.
But possibly for a different reason. Why did you...
Just
appeal to a broader audience?
Well, I saw what it was like Danny was doing, and it was kind of like, okay, yeah, I can try and appeal to every game developer and every programmer, whatever. But the stuff that I was doing, it was like, I want people to play these games. Like, there's a huge audience of gamers out there, right? And if I want them to watch this video, then I can't be going into like why time.delta time works and all this stuff. So it was like, it was kind of just trying to make it accessible to like a wider audience of people who would actually be interested in playing the games.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the reason. Yeah. What about you?
Right. So, so basically, what you're saying is, you, in a way, it's almost like you made a video that would appeal to the people who would want to play the game,
mm-hmm.
rather than necessarily developers who would want to recreate what you've done.
Yeah.
That's a smart way of looking at it.
The thing is, as well, is like when...
It's almost like a trailer. It's almost like your marketing strategy, I guess, for the game.
That's 100% what it was.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, like I used to just watch game like Sebastian Legge and stuff.
Yeah.
Even though I knew nothing about it because mm-hmm. it interested me. So it was kind of like, how do I take that and make it even more accessible, right?
Yeah.
Because there are, like, a lot of people who play video games are interested in how they're made.
Yeah.
They're just not necessarily interested to the point that they're going to boot up Unity. And
yeah.
So it's that audience, like, how do you get them to watch? That's kind of where I went, like, the reason that I decided to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the reason why I kind of switched from making it more technical is just because it was very overwhelming
mm-hmm.
to try. Like, because in the beginning, you know, Hazel was pretty simple. And so if I added something, I could kind of roughly cover all the bases of that implementation. But like now, if I'm like, you know, if I've been working on, you know, the renderer, like, cause I've been rewriting the renderer and that's been like the last 4 months and maybe like a solid 6 weeks of work within those 4 months. Like if I was to compress that down to a YouTube video, like I feel like there is zero value in that
right.
because first of all, presenting that much technical information in a way that would actually help people,
mm-hmm.
that's really long form content. Like it's just physically not possible for me to be like, let's do this quickly. Like, I mean, look at like GDC talks, for example, or like, you know, some kind of like games conference, even like CppCon or something, or SIGGRAPH for graphics stuff. Like you get a 1 hour talk and that's kind of the high level overview of how they did that, you know? And that's a 1 hour talk. And mm-hmm. that's a talk that they've obviously prepared really well. Like, if I was to make a video being like, this is the new renderer, it would be really long, which immediately makes it not that suitable for YouTube, right? But also, that wouldn't even be, like, too deep. So, what I've kind of switched to doing is being like, all right, well, I just feel like maybe 10 to 20%, maybe even less, of people would actually be like, yeah, I want to know the full details of this.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people who watch Hazel, like, devlogs, I think, they just want to be like, what have you guys been doing? What have you guys been up to?
Yeah.
You know, like show us some cool stuff basically. And so I feel like it's much better for me to make a 10 to 15 minute video that just kind of is like, check this out. I did this. This is roughly how I did it. This was the journey, the story. That's kind of interesting. And then here's the end result. Like it's a lot faster now or whatever.
Yeah,
100%. Or it has these new flashy features. And so what I've kind of started doing is what I want to start doing is making, basically these kind of long form videos for Patreon where mm-hmm. it's like, you know, I don't have to worry about the YouTube algorithm. I can just hit record, like explain everything at my own pace. It can be really chill and I can explain all the details.
Yeah.
And you know, those people who really want to watch that, like it's like $5 a month for that tier mm-hmm. to get access to it. But then you get that almost educational kind of, you know, deep content.
Right.
But then I don't have to like sacrifice the performance of my YouTube channel basically
100%.
For that. Because that's also difficult, you know, because what can happen a lot is if I have videos that are kind of bipolar, meaning like, you know, some videos do really well, mm-hmm. some videos do really badly. The problem is that a lot of like potential sponsors will look at that and they'll be like, all right, what's the average view count of the last 10 videos?
Yeah.
And then like I have to explain to them that like, or my managers have to explain to them that like, well, yeah, but we're not going to put your sponsored section on a video that's going to do badly, but then they don't quite buy that, or maybe they're not willing to commit, which makes sense. You know, I understand that, but that also means that like, you know, it kind of hurts the kind of business performance there.
They don't understand as well as you do, like what does well.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, you can take a tactical decision to release a certain video that you think's maybe not going to do as well but would provide a lot of value to subscribers, and then like you knew that was the case right before, but they don't see that side of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's
and of course they might not be willing to do like a whole bunch of research or take a risk on this, and I understand that, but it's also kind of like, it's funny because it's like, if I put a long form video about Hazel out, it hurts Hazel. Because obviously, like, you know, the money from sponsorships gets reinvested back into Hazel.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I actually share more about Hazel, then that means that sponsors are less likely to commit, you know, larger sums of money, which means that we can't fund Hazel. Like, we can't use that to fund Hazel as well, basically, and create more opportunities for Hazel. And so, like, you know, if there's a way to kind of shift that around, because that's also kind of one of the most annoying things, I think, is that, like, even though Hazel is, like, the product we're building. Mm-hmm. There's the whole YouTube side of the business, and that's like something I'm still kind of trying to maneuver.
Yeah.
But it also means that, yeah, like there are some concessions that have to be made. But I'm slowly finding ways, you know, like the Patreon deep dive videos that I think would be helpful, you know, for people who really want that content.
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
Because it's also like the way I see it is also a minority. You know, anytime I put up an educational series on YouTube, like the ray tracing series more recently, like they always get less views than just videos of me being like, hey, I did this, you right. know, or here's a
oh, really?
Reaction. Yep.
Because I'd think that more views would come from search for that.
But the YouTube algorithm doesn't spread it as well, because also the average view duration is a lot lower for those videos.
Okay.
Because like, you know, those aren't videos you just watch for fun. I mean, I'm sure some people do, mm-hmm. but it's more or less like most people would have to sit down and follow along with that.
Right.
And so if they're just on their phones, you know, just doom scrolling, and they come across that video, it's obviously not going to engage them.
Right.
And so that hurts the stats.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's interesting. So with something like the C++ series, then I'm guessing that
does well, though.
That does well through search. Yeah.
That does well through everything.
Oh, really?
Even though the average view duration is tiny, which is really interesting. Yeah, yeah. Like, I think it's still like usually around 20% of the video.
Okay.
I just think that maybe it's the constant hammering of search that propels it. And so maybe the algorithm is like,
yeah.
Because no other videos would really be popping up in search results that often, you know, but you've the C++ ones do.
Like, if you search C++, I reckon...
Oh, no, of course. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm definitely on the...
Tim, well, Jamie, get that going. Yeah, I mean, even...
Maybe do it in an incognito tab, so it's not...
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, even... even, like, C++ tutorial, definitely. There you are.
Our playlist is third.
Our third,
and then first video
search like C++ tutorial. Like
it's a while down. C++ tutorial.
No, not even close.
But your playlist is
they're pretty old. Maybe that's why as well.
Yeah.
But I do think like if but Tim actually. Bring up that incognito tab. Search for C++ pointers or something like kind of more specific, because C++ tutorial.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I don't have it. And people probably don't search for that unless they want to start. If you type in like C++, pointers.
Yeah, the amount of times I've watched your header file video when I've gone back to work with C++.
Yeah, it's pretty low, actually. What is
it? 6.
Yeah, maybe because it's old.
Headers probably first, I think.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I called it header files, though.
There it is.
All right. Well, this has been fun. Your ego. I think maybe it's because the search results bring in views. Then that way the algorithm also kind of spreads it. But for other videos, like about Hazel, you know, that obviously will get way less views from search results. And so if that doesn't like organically do well just from related videos, then it's probably less likely to be kind of promoted. Cool. Tim has acquired us a selection of drinks, by the way. We've got like some kombucha. And this, like, think, feel, do better nootropics thing. So, shout out to Tim. He's our Jamie for this podcast.
Yeah. What a legend.
Everyone needs a Jamie for a podcast.
So, wait, this is orange mango. Mm-hmm. Is this, like, popular in Australia?
I've never heard of it. I never heard of it before, Tim. Tim just bought it for, like, Ludum Dare a year ago, like, Ludum Dare 50. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an alternative for energy drinks. It's like a healthy alternative for an energy drink.
No, it tastes good.
Yeah, we've got like healthy alternatives to energy drinks and I guess soft drinks in a way because it's kombucha. But kombucha
is
great.
Yeah, like, so what is kombucha?
I drink kombucha
a lot.
We were
talking about this.
Oh, yeah, you haven't tried one, have you?
No.
Ever. Yeah, you should get on that.
We should probably explain like why we're in the same room.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, how did this come about?
Yeah. So I'm in Australia. So that's where we are right now.
I'm in the UK.
Yeah. No, so I'm just visiting, and we decided this needed to happen.
This needed to happen.
It's been years in the making.
Yeah. No, I just you just like tweeted being upside down.
Yeah,
I think, and I'm actually 90% sure you can't look this up for me, but I'm 90% sure I don't follow you.
Oh, I can look that up.
Yeah.
I'll be
but
very
the
offended.
The thing is, I haven't needed to because your tweets show up on my timeline anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty annoying on Twitter, to be honest.
Like, yeah, I'm never on Twitter. That's the thing, though. Instagram I use a lot.
You're not following me.
Yeah.
So offended.
Let's fix that.
Yeah, we're not carrying on this podcast until I see that that follows you.
Technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties. But yeah, it's so weird. I see your tweets anyway. Yeah, okay, now I'm following you. And so I saw that one of, yeah, you being upside down, you're in Australia. And then I just like replied and I was like, if you're in Melbourne, let me know. And
here we
know.
Are. So, yeah. There we go. Cherno followed you back. Cool. This is good. Kombucha.
Did you get the passion fruit one?
I'm trying the passion fruit one right now.
I like the passion fruit one.
It's pretty good.
All right. So what are we talking about? We're talking about... Yeah.
YouTube and stuff.
Basically, yeah, YouTube and... Yeah, okay. So like just around December 2020, it was your first video. And why did you... So you said that you basically started making those videos.
Well, it's kind of...
To promote the games, basically?
It's kind of a lie because I did make a few videos.
Okay.
But then... So I made this...
What was the first? Like, not your current channel, but like, did you ever have a channel before?
Yeah, yeah. No,
what
like, I was that kid.
Dabble in.
I tried everything. Okay. Like, I've been doing YouTube since like... As long as I can remember, like setting up my Samsung Galaxy Tab 2 aimed at the screen, playing Minecraft, kind of
nice.
Like I've done loads. Nothing.
Video recording your screen like from a camera.
Yeah, that was
those
the
were days. Yeah,
there was that, and then the only like time that I ever got anywhere with it was I did like some Fortnite stuff at one point.
Oh, okay,
they added like a big piano into the game. You could jump on it,
yeah,
and like I showed how you could make a song with that. And then that video did all right. I think it got like 20,000 views, but...
It's cool that you were creative even in like, you know, that.
Oh, I was doing YouTube. Like, I always knew I wanted to do YouTube. Yeah. I just didn't know what. And then, so when I started doing game dev, I was like, well, I might as well try this again.
Yeah.
And I originally tried making tutorials. I think I made one on like health bars and I still have the videos, but they're not public.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I actually don't know much about what I'm talking about here. Maybe tutorials isn't the play.
I started with tutorials as well, and I knew nothing. Like,
yeah.
I was like 16, and I started learning Java. And like 3 months later, I was making like videos on how to make a 3D game in Java.
It's kind of good though because you get a different perspective. Like,
yeah.
I think there's value in it because the people teaching have just learned this themselves, so they know exactly fresh in their mind how they clicked it. You know?
Yeah.
So there's that, but it's like you can't do anything advanced, and it's like I don't know.
One of the reasons why I started doing that specifically, I remember, was because I was always like pretty decent at math, like in high school.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people would ask me for help, you know, and then I'd come over to them and I'd explain stuff to them and like help them out with their math. And in doing so, it would reinforce, like I'd be like, yeah, that's a good point. Like I would learn more about it, you know, yeah. I would kind of look at it from a different perspective, I guess. And so I realized that by teaching, like you learn so much. Mm. And I think that coupled with the fact that once I had the ball rolling, for some reason, those videos took off like immediately. Yeah. And I mean, took off is like, you know, not like millions of views, but like I was getting like, I don't know, a few hundred views, like maybe a few thousand views pretty much instantly. And like, I'm pretty sure like since the day I posted the first episode, I was getting like 7 subscribers a day.
Like, oh, wow.
Just out of nowhere. I guess search results or something.
Yeah.
But like it just immediately started rolling. So there was already like after a few months, there was already like a few hundred people that were subscribed to me
who were
tuning in every Sunday when I would release an episode. And so sometimes I'd be like, all right, well, I've basically taught everything I know. What's next? Like I have to learn more. But then and then I might have been lazy, but the people would be writing me messages being like, bro, where's the next episode? Like, why are you not coming out with another episode? And so I think when I was not motivated, those people would kind of almost force me to keep pushing through stuff I didn't know and actually learn, you know, even if I wasn't feeling like it or I just wanted to play video games or I wanted to do whatever. So I think that whole kind of idea of just learning stuff fresh and then immediately like flipping it and teaching it. Like, yeah, of course I said a lot of rubbish and I said a lot of stuff that was just completely false. And like, there were way better ways of doing stuff and I didn't explain everything, but like it benefited me quite a bit, which is funny.
That's what matters at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Where were we at? Oh yeah. The tutorials. And then I was like, maybe I should do something else. So I made a game called Exhausted, which was like, it was like a, it was weird. You played as a car and you had a certain amount of fuel and you had to get to the next fuel canister to carry on through the level.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like a pun, like, because the car got exhausted.
Oh, you... right, yep.
Yeah. And then I made a devlog series on that. 3 episodes, I think. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the same.
Are those still up somewhere?
No.
Or did you not?
I have them. But I don't
private
like them
or whatever. Yeah.
And then did the same thing for another game that I was working on called Gatling, which was basically like a tower defense game, but
right.
you play as a plane, and there's like waves of planes coming in and like blimps and things, yep. and you have to defend this central crystal.
Yeah.
I'd like to revisit that at some point. Like, it was cool.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, that was the first stint of videos, and nothing did very well. And at that point, I was like, I want to do higher quality stuff, but less frequently, and try and, you know, do some more one-off things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I made the first video that's still public, which was sled racing from Club Penguin. I turned that into mm-hmm. a multiplayer game.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've seen that video, yeah.
Honestly, I don't think that video would still be up if I didn't hold so much like sentimental value.
Yeah.
Just because that was the first one that I was like really proud of.
Man, I'm really bad. Like, I'm really bad at doing that, like taking down videos.
Yeah.
Like, I've taken down a few, but there is so much garbage on my channel that I really probably should clean up. But like, I don't know why.
There's just,
I need to go through my channel and delete a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Because everyone does that. Everyone seems to do that, but I never do that, basically.
I don't know. There's benefits and cons like doing it, but the main thing for me was that I'd completely shifted the direction that I wanted to take my YouTube channel in, and like the editing was so much higher quality than everything else.
Yeah.
That was just kind of like, this is the fresh start now.
Well, it's kind of like, in a way, you wanted to present it like a portfolio of your work.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yeah. And then I did the C++ video, and then I did a couple more, but like nothing happened with those. But then the C++ video started to go off. And then, yeah, that's when I was like, right, I'll do more of these. So we did the challenge videos with mm-hmm. Polymars, the $1,000 ones and stuff.
Yep.
They were like, they did really well, which we kind of, we thought they were going to do well. Cause I remember we had like a call where we sat down and we were like, what other niches can we apply to game dev? Like, mm-hmm. how can we change this up? Cause we saw like Danny had, you know, kind of made his more like entertaining and like yep. gaming videos, and we were like, what can we take from? And we were like, Mr. Beast, obviously.
Yeah.
Biggest guy.
Yep.
Like, how can we apply that? So then we were like, oh, we'll use money for the stakes, and like we'll try and edit it in a more like fast paced and yep. like, and it worked. And then we made a couple of those, mm-hmm. and then yeah, just been making games since, and
mm-hmm.
that's where I'm at now.
And so you're kind of, but longer term, you still see yourself more as a game developer, right, than a YouTuber?
I honestly don't know.
You don't know? You're still kind of...
Because I like the entire thing.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that I can start with nothing
yeah.
and end up with a game and a documentary on that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
That entire process, like, I love that.
Yeah.
Just creating it all from nothing. But yeah. I think I do enjoy the YouTube side of it more. But... it's the longevity of it. I don't think it's going to last forever.
Right, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is kind of where I'm like, I want to transition more into traditional game development
yep.
kind of thing. So that's kind of the thought process I'm at the moment.
Do you ever feel like it's like such a saturated environment now that it's so accessible to make games that trying yeah. to survive as a game developer would be difficult long-term as well? So say the YouTube, as you said, it's not going to last forever and it goes down. Like, does it worry you at all that you'll be able to create and market games in such a saturated market?
Yeah, because obviously, like, the only reason that, you know, I'm so eager to make this game is because I've got an audience who are instantly going to play it, right?
Yeah.
That's such a huge advantage. And I feel like a lot of indie developers don't realize how massive of a tool that actually is.
Yeah.
Like, just to share some numbers, like, I released 4 Steam games last year, mm-hmm. and every single one of them has got over 200,000 downloads.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not amazing.
Yeah.
They're far from it. Like, these were things that I made in 2-3 months
mm-hmm.
that I kind of threw together just for a video.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about the game. Like, I cared more about the video at the end of it.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a backwards way of making stuff, but just based on that, like, I made 4 all right games and for a total of, like, almost 1 million downloads.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I have the audience.
Yeah.
Right? That's such a powerful tool.
It'd be really interesting to see. Is there any way you can see on Steam, I guess, how much comes from natural, like, Steam suggestions versus, say, direct links?
Yeah.
Because it'd be interesting out of those 200,000, like, how much is directly your audience versus, like, maybe if your audience gives it that push in the beginning, it's almost like the YouTube algorithm. It, like, spreads it to so many people who, you know, in turn brings audience to your YouTube from Steam.
Yeah, so I have a theory for this because I released the first one, Mushy, in, like, January last year. And that came out and it did way better than I thought it was going to do. And my theory is like, because it's a multiplayer game, it's free. Like, anyone who watches my video is going to go and be like, oh, I want to play this now. Mm-hmm. Who do I play this? Oh, I've got these friends on Discord. Let's get them involved. And then they start playing and they're like, oh, this guy's got a YouTube channel. So then they go to the YouTube channel, which helps the video.
Yep.
But it also helps the game because they've shared it with their friends. And then it creates this like back and forth effect where Steam is now pushing my YouTube videos and my YouTube videos are now pushing the Steam game.
Yep.
And it's like, they're almost like working in tandem to just grow this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think all four of them were on New and Trending and everything, like, which means that the Steam algorithm definitely played a huge part in that, because I don't think you could even get on New and Trending just through like direct.
Yeah. No, well, it's
I think it has to
be somewhat real.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm sure there'd be like bot farms.
Yeah, exactly.
Exist for that kind of stuff.
But yeah, no, like, it's insane. Like, having a YouTube channel is 100% the best thing you can do. And TikTok as well. Like, it's,
I've always, like, I guess, treasured that and thought about that. Because I guess I've had a YouTube channel before I really started trying to make things.
Yeah.
And so having that initially, it's like, I've never not had that. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like, sometimes when people are making games, because they want to be game developers.
Yeah.
They don't want to make YouTube videos, but they want to be game developers. And then, like, you know, there's all these, like, stressful like guides on how to market your game. Oh, you should start a Twitter early in the development and start posting updates. You should do this and that. And it's like that would be so scary.
I agree. Like that sounds horrible to me.
Yeah.
Because the other thing as well with having a YouTube channel, like a decently successful one, is like you're also like financially covered while you're developing, right? But if you're starting from scratch and you're making a completely new game and you've not got that, like you're not only you're gonna have to financially support yourself, but then you're gonna also have to market the game, and it's like that's so much more work. And I don't know, I'd recommend anyone make a YouTube channel for your game. Like,
yeah,
it's the best thing you can possibly do in the market.
And I think a lot of people are, obviously a lot of people are interested in the development of games, right? Because devlogs tend to do well, and then gamers, I think what's interesting as well is that like there are lots of, you know, like people who consume films, people who love movies. Like, okay, maybe people who are really into movies like to see how they're made.
Yeah.
But I feel like people who consume movies, they just like to consume movies.
Right.
Like, people just like to watch movies, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of gamers, like maybe past casual gamers, they like to think of themselves as pretty technical.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, what's interesting is that, like, who cares what game engine a game was made in? Oh, but it does. Because gamers will be like, oh, well, the physics are like that because that's the source engine. Like, you know, people will, like, lots of people who play games and consume that kind of...
They have, like, the surface level knowledge.
Yeah, but they like to pretend that they know a lot more as well. Yeah. And so I feel like because of that, devlogs specifically resonate really well with that crowd who actually will play games.
Yeah, 100%.
And they like to see how games are developed. Which can work really well, because if you are making a game, then turns out people want to see how it's made.
Yeah.
And that is just a really good kind of cycle, vicious cycle of success.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
When you were talking about the backwards, how it was kind of backwards way of, I guess, development, because it's almost like the video, in a way, drives the game. You're making a game for a video.
Yeah.
I think, doing things backwards seems to be quite successful in general, because I feel like what I started doing recently is, because I guess I realized how important video, like the video title and thumbnail is on YouTube. I would basically come up with a video title and a thumbnail before I made the video.
Yep.
And I would still kind of have like the topic would, I still come up with a topic and be like, oh, I want to make a video on this topic. But I would then be like, all right, well, what could it be? Like, what would the title be? What would the thumbnail be? Like, how do I package this information in something that's appealing to people? And then from there, I'd basically structure and create a video to kind of suit what I thought would make a good title and thumbnail. And that just seems to do a lot better.
See, this is the problem as well. Like, this is why it's so hard to... It's so much more difficult than you'd think to be an indie developer on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, from my experience, like, I am kind of, like, fully on the YouTube side of things rather than, like, I'm more interested in that for mm-hmm. the most part than game development,
yep.
at least right now. And I would have lists of game ideas. And I'm not picking these game ideas based on the one that I want to work on the most. Yeah. I'm picking a game idea based on what I think is going to do the best.
Yeah.
So, for example, like, my Manhunt game, like, I was fairly confident that video was going to do well before I'd even started anything on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, it's Manhunt. You've got the dream Manhunt stuff. You know, most people played that game as a kid. Like, I'm going to have these weird characters. Like, that did well in my last game. It's goofy. It's mm-hmm. multiplayer. It's free. This can't fail.
Yeah.
And then I released the video and it did really well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you have to be in that mindset. And there's a lot of people that do this, like, to the extreme, where they will specifically make these, like, really low quality videos and, like, or low quality games, and then make devlogs on them, but, like, they're just trying to exploit some sort of, like, nostalgia or something.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like,
remaking. They want to resonate with an audience, like, what, a certain right. audience, I guess.
Like, for example, like, I don't know, something like Mario Kart, or which I did, to be fair, or like Subway Surfers, or
yeah.
Angry Birds or something like that, where, like, the game doesn't even have to be good. This is the thing.
Yeah.
If the video is, like, marketed yeah. properly, like, this is the problem. And a lot of indie developers are working on games that they're, like, genuinely passionate about, like, their dream games and stuff. And if you've already sunk time into that and now you want to market this, like, maybe it's not the best thing for YouTube.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're in that position and then you try to market it, like, it is difficult. Yeah. Like, there's so many different ways of looking at it, you know?
And I think as well that, like, it's definitely not necessarily a bad thing to have those restrictions. Like, in a way, it's kind of like, I want to make a dream game, but actually let me make something that's a bit more suited
yeah.
for something. Like, you might look at that as like, why are you limiting yourself creatively? But I feel like a lot of the times when you are, as an artist, limited creatively, you know, that's where you're forced to kind of think outside the box and mm-hmm. maybe even create something a bit more original.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to make it fit, like, a certain format, I guess. And that's why, like, in a way, you know, with game jams that are based on particular themes, I feel like the games that do really well in those game jams, and not just, like, you know, in terms of votes and stats, but, like, just, you know, how good is this work of art? How good is this game? Like, right. is it fun? Are the games that adhere closer to the themes? Because when you place those restrictions on yourself, like, I feel like you're forced to try and create something that fits within that box.
Yeah.
And that can be, you know, something really, I guess, special compared to just, like, this is open-ended. I'm going to make something a bit more kind of, I don't know, bland.
Yeah. Not 100%. Yeah. I agree with that. And, yeah. Little kombucha break.
What do you think about like, what do you think about marketing games? Like, aside from, like, you've got YouTube, right? And you can kind of somewhat rely on that to at least give the game an initial push. But is there anything else that you think you'll do for marketing aside from just?
Yeah, I have an idea of something that I'd like to try.
Uh huh.
So I made a. TikTok's like the main focus of this because
mm-hmm.
it's so much easier to get views on TikTok than YouTube because yep. their algorithm's just so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it knows how to give people exactly what they want to see.
Yeah.
So as long as there's an audience for your thing is going to probably get views as long yep. as it's semi-good quality, right? So I did a few TikToks. Like, they did all right. Like, I think one of them got like 700,000 views or something, which is crazy because it took me an hour to edit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to do that on YouTube would be, you know, obviously the views are a lot less, like, they hold a lot less weight.
Yeah.
Because it's just people, you know, scrolling
yeah,
through.
Yeah, they're less likely to engage and actually.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. And then I did like a little series where I did like a game for every letter of the alphabet once a day. And that I ended up getting to like G, I think.
Yeah. And I was I saw that.
Yeah.
No, and that mysteriously dropped off my radar. It's interesting how I'm served up so much of your content, like on Twitter, without following you, though. Yeah. Maybe it's because people I follow reply to you, though. Maybe that's
it's fine. A pretty niche, like, you know, yeah. Like, you get recommended everything.
Because I'm fairly sure I follow Polly Mars.
Oh,
if
wow.
If I don't, then it's like, why is this happening? So you got up to G.
Yeah. Got up to G. But yeah, like, I want to see what...
I don't.
Like, you don't?
I wanna follow him as well.
Wow.
Following two people on a podcast I didn't envision doing before we started.
So yeah, the idea is, like, okay, those views don't hold much weight right now. Like, how can you make them hold more weight, I guess? So what I want to try and do is do some mobile games.
Yeah.
Because everyone on TikTok is on their phone, yeah. Right? Its average audience is a lot younger. So mm-hmm. I think that might be the play. Like, I want to try and just make a mobile game,
mm-hmm.
throw some, like, you know, replayable ads or whatever on there and just see how well it does.
Yeah.
Marketing through TikTok. And I think that'll work. Like, I think there's a huge untapped potential there.
Yeah.
Specifically for mobile games.
And especially, like, I think you should definitely try and make that game specifically optimized to be a mobile game.
Yes.
Like, yeah. You know, the controls and everything. It shouldn't just be like some arbitrary game that let's map it to mobile controls.
No, 100%.
Like, you should almost, like, natively take control of the device and optimize it, yes, for that experience. Yeah.
That's what I want to do. Like, Sam Hogan did a game, like, Stick With It, it was called. It's like a rage game.
Yeah,
I don't know. Jamie, pull that up. It's like a blue ball. He's like got soft body physics.
Yeah.
And he sticks to things, and then you get an arrow that, like, goes like this.
I've definitely seen that.
And you have to tap at a specific time. Yeah, that's the game. But it's like something like that would be perfect, right?
Yeah.
Because it looks cool. Like, you got like a. Yeah, get some gameplay. There you go. So you just have to tap, and then it. Yeah.
And it's so good when there are a few controls as well.
It's just one, yeah.
Yeah. When it's like, I feel like sometimes, again, it can get so overwhelming being like, it's when people try to make serious games for mobile, that's what also kind of bugs me sometimes.
Yep.
Because it's just like, it's just frustrating to play,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because why, if a game is better played on a computer, you know, if that's really the game you want to make and it's better on like a PC or a console, like, make it for that.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. It's almost like, because pretty much everyone has a computer. It's like, I understand, like, if you don't want to make games, it's like console exclusive, because more people will have computers, most likely, right?
Yeah.
But for mobile, like, most people probably have a, like, laptop or a phone.
Yeah, I think.
And it's kind of like almost picking the best tool for the job.
Right.
Know? If you really want to deliver this experience, then it's almost like if you look at the game as its own entity. Yeah, it's not like a PC game or a mobile game. It's a game.
Yeah, where's it?
This is the experience I want to present. Where would that experience best be? Mm-hmm. You know, almost like an installation artwork.
Yeah.
Where it's like, do I project it on a projector or do I have it on a small little display? What looks better?
Yeah.
What feels
better? No, I agree with that. Although I think like a lot of big game companies are starting to just port games to mobile just because they can. And it's like, some of them work really well. I think it's because, like Southeast Asia, like, a lot of people don't have, like, computers and stuff, but they do have phones. So it's like COD Mobile, for example.
Yeah.
That is so fun.
Yeah.
Like, it works so well, but a lot of them don't. Like, they'll just completely one-to-one port something, and then it just doesn't seem to work on the phone. Like, it has to be, you almost have to take a lot more care with your design when you're going for mobile, just because you've got a lot less wiggle room. Like, it needs to feel perfect, almost.
Well, it's such a restricted kind of platform as well. Like, you know, it's hard to do stuff well unless you have, like, one of those controllers that you can snap the phone onto, and then it's kind of okay. But, like, even, like, you know, Fortnite Mobile, like, that does really well. I'm just, like, I'm honestly a bit surprised that anyone would bother playing that on a phone. You know,
as I say, I think a lot of it is Southeast Asia, like the numbers,
and kids who maybe aren't even allowed, like, computer time or don't have a computer, who can just kind of sneak away with a phone and play it.
It's,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge market. I think it's bigger than, like, PC and console now.
Mobile.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, I know it was growing like crazy when I was making mobile games, like, at EA. Yeah.
But yeah. No, that's the plan. Like, I want to make something really small and polished, and then just try and market as much of it as I can on TikTok and see how far that goes.
Yeah.
At the very least, it'll be a fun experiment.
Yeah.
So.
How many, like, what's your development schedule like? Because you're doing this full time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you set your hours and work and stuff?
I'm really bad at that, actually, to be honest. Like, I kind of burnt myself out, which is why I'm here. Like, I kind of wanted to just say, you know, take a break from
people
everything.
People come to the Studio Cherno when they burn themselves out. This is the
this is the
therapy.
Place.
This is the clinic.
I was told. I was told by a man in England to come here. Sent on a quest.
A mysterious shaman. Yeah.
A guy in a wizard's robe. No, what was I saying?
Well, you burnt yourself out.
Yeah,
so you
kinda,
ended up here.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of like just, I don't know, like I was, it was at the point where I was like, I would work like 12 hours a day, just like get up, just work. Sometimes like if me and, because obviously I'm working with someone in Australia, like I'd have to stay up late quite a bit, or he'd have to stay up late. And so it would get to the point where I'd be on this like 2 week cycle of like my sleep schedule would just get progressively worse and worse and worse, but I'd still be working the same amount of time, even if I was sleeping later and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I need to figure out how I'm going to do this better, to be honest, because I'm terrible at it. I just work until I can't, and then I rest. And that's kind of the strategy thus far. I'm not very good at taking breaks and things. Like, I just power through, to be honest.
So, because I was going to ask you how you balance, you know, your time off, I guess, with...
I honestly, like, it, for example, like, if I want to go out or something, like, I'll just wait until that's happening, and then I'll just give myself the time. And like, as long as I'm not taking too much time away, like I'm quite good at like spontaneously just doing things that I want to do rather than having a certain day every week that I want to, you know, have off. Cause then I feel like that won't line up with a lot. Like, a lot of my friends aren't as lucky to be doing what I'm doing. So they have schedules and stuff. And so it's easier to just kind of be free with it. And then whenever I need to take breaks or go and do something, like, I can just do that.
Yeah.
And then I don't feel guilty about not working enough, because whenever I'm not doing that, I am working.
Do you take weekends off, or do you just, that's
not
like any
really.
Other day? It doesn't really matter. Yeah.
No, honestly. But like I do a lot of things during the week. It's just at different points, like, you know, like I'll go out for a few hours or whatever, but it's never planned, right?
Yeah.
I'll just, I just play it as it is.
Yeah.
Which is probably not the best thing.
Well, I mean, you've wound up in Australia on a burnout break, so...
Definitely not the best thing.
So so I feel like it might actually be better to like try and force yourself to take, you know, breaks and balance it, you know.
Yeah.
Because like, I mean, I used to do that as well. I basically used to just, in all my spare time, I'd kind of just like be like, all right, I want to work on Hazel. Or back when I worked at EA, like, you know, I'd come home and work on like the C++ series videos, and like it was always kind of like, because work for me was fun. So therefore it's like, if I have some spare time, I want to do some programming.
Right.
Like, I want to do some, and I've got like, I have other interests as well,
mm-hmm.
but like, it still kind of like keeps coming back to this, I guess, most of the time. And so that kind of also wasn't the best, because it would mean that like I find that every time I go on a holiday somewhere and I'm forced to not touch anything, I'm just itching to get back at it. And I think most people who are
kind of where I'm at now.
Like, I like that. Yeah. I mean, this was kind of a business trip for you. You probably did some dev in Brisbane, no?
No, actually.
Oh, okay.
I've not touched a line of code for like a month.
Oh, great. Yeah.
It's been good. That wasn't the original plan. But then I got over here and I was kind of like,
yeah, screw everything. Like, I'm having a
party. I was like, I tried to work, and like, I tried to start on this mobile thing, and I was just like, nah, I need time. Like, because it's like, I also didn't want to waste the trip, right? Like, I've flown halfway across the world.
Yeah. You know?
But yeah, no.
Flown halfway across the world to basically do what you could have done at home.
Yeah. It's not the play.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, yeah.
What actually ended up happening for me is like, I guess, you know, once I got into a relationship and I got married, like, I guess I'm not just single anymore, which means that I don't really get to 100% choose how I spend my time.
Right.
And so like, my wife will obviously, and now that I have a daughter, like, you know, I can't really work weekends. That's not really fair to them. And so it's in a way, it's like, I'm forced to obviously balance my time with that.
Yeah.
And so I can't just like I can't just work 24/7. And that's good because, like, I feel like if I was, like, all alone and I was single and I was just, like, you know, my friends didn't want to do anything or whatever, then it's like, what would I do? Like, well, what else would I do? Like, maybe I'll play some music or go out on a hike or do something kind of outside of my work.
You're 100% right.
But I'd get back to it.
Like, because I was in a relationship last year and it was good because whenever I was taking a break, like, we were spending time together. So it's like,
yeah,
you're almost forced into taking these breaks. Like, having something else there to get you out of it all is great. Like, recently for me, that's been rock climbing. Like, just going and getting better at rock climbing. Like, I love doing it. It's great. And so having another thing you can do definitely helps.
Yeah.
To alleviate the stress and, like, actually, you know, force you to take breaks. If you are naturally the sort of person that will just keep going. Yeah, I think you definitely need something like that, or the gym, or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, I go to the gym quite often. Like, I usually go, it's just, like, down the road from the office.
Yeah.
So, like, usually around lunch, like, I'll, you know, I'll have, like, a nice kind of breakfast to fuel me up for that. Mm-hmm. And then a few hours after breakfast, I'll go to the gym for, like, an hour or so.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, last week I did it literally every day. And it's just such a good, like, way to just completely, it's almost like I come back and it's like a new day, you know, because I'll go to the gym and, like, you know, have a nice workout, and then, like, I'm not sure if this is the best thing to do after a workout, but I always end my workout with a cold shower,
right?
And I've started kind of doing cold showers in the morning sometimes, although it's getting cold
they're now, also
so I kind of but it's just like, oh, it just completely snaps you out of it. And I'll have a cold shower, the entire shower will be cold after my workout, and it just gets me into, like, this almost survival mode.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like I get back to the office and I'm just, like, super focused, and I'm like, it's like a new day, you know? It's like, that's it. Because before that, I feel like I used to have this thing where after lunch, you know, I'd kind of just be a little bit done with the day, and I'll be like, oh, I'll just do that tomorrow, you know? I'll just, like, whatever, like, I'll just, like, I don't want to film anything because I'm not motivated, so it won't be as energetic, it won't be as engaging, I'll just do it tomorrow. But this is like making 2 days in one, and it's really cool.
I think it's good as well, because, like, what I've noticed with rock climbing is because I'm in, like, a place and I'm using my brain, but it's not looking at a screen, which is very rare nowadays, you know, like, to actually be actively thinking but you're not looking at a screen.
Yeah.
You walk out of there and you feel so good.
Yeah.
Same with the gym. Like, just you've spent so much time just, like, doing something else that's productive, and you feel great about yourself. And that helps as well to not get burnt out, because, you know, you come back into it and you're in a good mood. So
yeah,
it takes longer. Yeah.
No, it's really important to balance work. And I think that, like, especially when you're working on large projects, you know, like, if you're working on a game that is obviously, like, more than maybe a small 2-3 month game, you know, I'm working on Hazel, which is, you know, quite a large game engine, and there's, like, it's really easy to get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that when you're a little bit, when you're constantly active and you're working on something, like, you can kind of, it's almost like you get, I don't know, like, if you get, like, tunnel vision, or what the best way to phrase this is, but you get sucked into that world, and it's almost like you become a small ant, just, like, crawling around the code, and you're like, I'm just surrounded by, like, code.
Yeah,
it's everywhere. Like, I'm losing. It feels like I'm losing a grasp on how everything is fitting together and working. Like, will this even work in the end? Like, have I just been refactoring this code for no reason and trying to improve it? Like, are the stats really right? Was I sure about the timings? Like, is this really going to come together in the end? And I feel like, you know, and then you start thinking, like, oh, my life is just, like, this is just code, this is just, like, an engine, this is gonna, I'm never gonna have these features, like, I'm never gonna be able to finish this, like, I can't even, oh, but then there's that I have to do after I do this thing. Like, it's so easy to just get sucked into that world, and that's all that exists almost, you know, and you just get so overwhelmed. But I feel like when you step back from that and you force yourself, just physically force yourself for time, like, to get time to pass. Just, like, I don't know, go watch a clock or something, but just do something that will just alleviate the pressure from your brain and let you just clear it. I feel like, well, for me at least, it's almost like my mood starts improving and I'm kind of like, ah, this isn't that bad. Like, I'll just, you know, I was able to do this last year. Like, I'll just work through it, you know, slowly. Because I guess in a way, it's like you're zooming out. This is kind of a good way to look at it, I think. The more you actively work, it's like you've got your camera,
yeah,
and you're just zooming in. You've just got your finger on that little zoom button, yeah, like, you know, one, like a handy cam, like a camcorder. You're just on the zoom button a little bit. So you're just like zooming, 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 zooming in. And then when you take a break, especially like not just like a break to, I don't know, have lunch, but like a day, 24 yeah. hours or more, 48 hours off, you know, that's like you zooming out.
Yeah.
And then so you kind of zoom out and you kind of just like see the big picture of like how the pieces fit together. And then when you start working on it again, zooming in a little bit.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to kind of zoom out to see kind of, because I feel like when you're just an employee working in a big software team, you have someone who is constantly zoomed out. You have like a development director or a producer, or even a technical director who oversees like the whole project.
Yeah.
And they are responsible to make sure that everyone is doing stuff on time and that the pieces are going to fit together.
Yeah.
But when you do the job of a software engineer who might be working on an intricate system and also that management, you have to ping pong between them. And if you don't, if you're always a software engineer, then zooming out so that you can see the whole project and direct it and also be sure that it is actually going to finish one day, you know, or at least get to an appropriate milestone, like that ping-ponging between those two, like, is just so important. And you can't get that if you don't take breaks from doing that one job.
No, that's a really good way of putting
it. Like, I think that's super important. So that's what you should do when you get back to the UK. Force yourself to have a weekend or even one day a week. Just do nothing.
Yeah. No, I do need to get better at that. Definitely. What's your thoughts on AI within game dev?
Oof. AI. I think that, like, I was always a bit skeptical of AI being that useful. Like, people were worried that it would take over jobs. But I've been using it for like the last month or so, just playing around with it. I haven't done anything serious with it. I've been showing like stuff to like Tim and Peter. And like, it's pretty wild. Like, you know, I mean, with something like, you know, Dolly, getting it to generate images for you, it almost removes the need for a concept artist. Like, I was just thinking about how nice it would be. Like, sometimes I've asked him in the past, like, hey, it'd be nice to put together some concept art for our game or whatever. And like, obviously big studios, big productions, they have a team of concept artists. And that's really useful because you basically tell the concept artist, this is what I want it to look like. Add these things. And it's like, if you feed that into an AI, it's getting to the point where you can basically get the same result. And it's just so cool for like, you know, previs and just like pre-production, just being able to play with a look and play with like a direction and be like, what would this look like? You know, and that's just like, obviously that's just an example. Like, you know, there's like ChatGPT and being able to be like, I need some game ideas, man. Please help me out. You know, like, 100%. I need a game. This needs to happen. That needs to happen. I'm missing a unique twist. Give me one.
See, I think this is where it starts to get a little bit dangerous though, because I had this exact experience probably like 2 weeks ago where I was just like, I couldn't think of any ideas for this mobile game. And so I was like, all right, I'll ask ChatGPT. And so I asked a very vague question, like, give me five games within, you know, that work with this device and whatever. And it did. And then I started to refine my search a little bit more and like give it more parameters to work with and more restrictions. And it gave me a list of five really good ideas. But I didn't do anything for those ideas. And I feel like if you rely on that, like, it's going to, I know I would get to the point where I wouldn't be able to do anything without it. It would become this like extension of me, which is such a scary thought. And I don't know how to navigate that. It's like, do I fully embrace this and be like, okay, well, so what? Like, I prompted it. It's my idea, whatever. Or do you try and, you know, distance yourself a little bit so you don't fully lose all of that? Because that's so scary to me, like, just how easily I can see myself becoming so reliant on it. But is that even a bad thing? Like,
well, I think that it definitely can be, because at the end of the day, it's like, what it, it's an extension of you, as you said. It's really, it's an extension of your brain. It's like, I don't want to do the thinking. Like, do the thinking for me, come up with ideas for me. You know, and I mean, on one hand, it's good because obviously you get a fresh perspective. You know, it's not like, even if you spent an hour thinking of a game idea, you just don't have as much knowledge. you know, as that AI. So therefore, you'd never be able to come up with, let's just say, this idea.
I think the best way to approach it, or how I'm going to personally approach it, is to try and come up with my own ideas and then use AI to enhance that.
Yeah.
So like, if I have an idea for a mobile game, I'll say, okay, this is my idea, but I need like a couple of obstacles. Could you give me some and explain why they would be beneficial to like what value would they add to the game, right? Yep. And then listen to what it has to say. Like, that for me is like a genuine, okay, like fair enough use for AI. But I feel like if I was using it for everything, like what art style should I use? What game mechanic should be in this game? Like, and just everything. And then every time I have a problem, I'm then getting AI to solve this thing for me. It gets to the point where it's like, what am I actually doing? But I'm just a prompt engineer at that point.
Yeah, I don't think it's like, I would like to not use it for ideas and like, I would prefer to use it for technical things. So like, for example, there's one that I came across recently that can generate materials for you. So you can give it a prompt and it'll generate like a full PBR material set for you.
That's awesome.
You know, like albedo, normal, roughness, metalness, like here you go. Of whatever you give it like a text prompt. And you can be like, I want some, I don't know, like a tile that is red and is rough and is, you know, has the Cherno logo on it. I don't know. Like, and it will like generate it for you. And like, that's kind of cool and that's useful. Mm-hmm. And it almost replaces or enhances something an artist will be able to do. Because it's not like, you know, it's not magical. You're not just going to get a texture and you're like, yep, that's slap it in the game. Mm-hmm. That looks perfect. That's exactly what I wanted it to look like.
Yeah.
You're probably still going to need to tweak it or play with prompt or feed it back in. But for like creativity, you know, for like ideas, for stuff that like really is less technical and more human, I feel like it would be a bad idea to rely too heavily on that, because then like, you know, it's kind of like imperfections. Mm-hmm. You know, like if we talk about music for a second, like auto-tune's very prevalent and pretty much everyone uses it, but if it's like, but there's also something organic about imperfections in music. Like if you don't, you know, record one guitar note at a time and then sequence it so that the timing is perfect and it's just, it's like the note sounds flawless and everything's great and you just layer it, like, you know, you sequence it perfectly, like if you just record a guitar take naturally, there's something organic about it that I think people really like. It doesn't sound as robotic,
right?
And same with like pitch, like being slightly like a few cents off or whatever, like it just kind of, you know, people even sometimes detune things, you know, especially if they like pan it left and right and make it a bit wider, then they'll detune it by a few cents just to get that imperfection, because it actually ends up sounding bigger and better. Right. And I think that like, if you start to tune everything up and tighten things and you make it like with ideas, you make it less organic, then I think it becomes a lot more like robotic in a way.
Right.
And it will kind of take the soul away from it, even though it's based off of a conglomeration of like other game ideas that have made it. There's still something like natural, I think, and imperfect about the way that humans think, which resonates better, you know, like with humans.
See, I want to be on your side on that, but I also like, that's like the number one like defense for it not taking over and not doing everything for us, is that we have something special.
Yeah.
But for how long? How long is it until it can replicate that?
Well,
you know?
Because obviously you can replicate imperfections as well.
That's the problem.
But it's weird because like, again, it's so new in this field, but I just know that like I just don't, you know, to bring it back to music and like autotune, like I just don't know if that, like, because you can obviously tell the autotune plugins to be less perfect, but it's not the same.
No,
like it just doesn't work
right,
like as well, like you can still kind of, you can either tell or it just doesn't sound as good.
Okay.
And it can add vibrato and stuff and it can make it like so it's not like a robotic clean note, right, which no one really ever sings, but it's still just like not as appealing.
Well, it's a good point because like you can like compare it to video games, right? Like if you have someone who knows what they're doing with music and they're applying the autotune in a way that is, you know, good and it adds to the song, like it's going to sound great. But if you've got someone who knows nothing about music and they're relying 100% on autotune and then that's all that they're doing, like it is going to sound wrong. And it's the same thing with games. Like if, you know, someone like us that kind of knows what they're doing, like uses AI to enhance what we're already doing, then it's going to be beneficial to us and like we're going to know how to use it in the correct way.
Yeah.
But there is the danger of like new developers who are relying 100% on this tool, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're going to start getting games that are like decent.
People are already flipping Unity asset games, you know?
Yeah, you can
on Steam.
Like there's so much stuff. Like AI can easily replicate like mobile games or like super simple stuff. Like, and we're going to get that if just these hundreds and hundreds of games that no one's actually touched.
I wonder if we'll see branding in the future being like, this was 100% made by humans. Like, this is a AI does not contain traces of AI.
Yeah,
like,
do you reckon people will only consume human media? Like, they won't acknowledge the AI.
You can, like, on Netflix, you can filter it by, like, no AI.
It's like being vegan. Like, you just...
There'll be, like, a cult, like, an underground cult that just has, like, vanilla media. Like, it was actually 100% made by humans or whatever. But maybe people thought like that about computer. Like, you know, when digital took over analog, maybe there was probably, like, a cult following of, like, just analog only.
I just think this is... like, it's incomparable to anything. Like, it's huge. So powerful.
Yeah.
But I think there was a time in history when we didn't have calculators.
Right.
And then calculators were introduced, and all of a sudden you don't need to know long division anymore. Because 4 or 5 clicks of a button and you have your answer.
I think the biggest difference is, like, if you try and compare it to anything, like, you've still got this, like, narrow view. Like, with that, like, it's 100% to do with math and numbers and whatever. This thing can do anything. This can enhance any aspect of all of our lives. You know, like, it's...
Well, it's different. It's like having a really intelligent person with you all the time that can do things instantly.
Yeah.
It's like a superpower.
Yeah.
But luckily, you know, we as in me and I guess my team are really bad at using existing tools to our benefit, you know, such as engines. So I feel like if anything, we'll be okay. Like, we'll probably be like, I want to do it myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to use
AI. AI.
Yeah. but yeah, like I think it's really important to try and maybe not use it for creative things. But like, again, to bring it back to technical things, like, I'm working on a video right now, like with C++ and AI, and it's just interesting because, like, because I just started playing around with ChatGPT, and I was like, I saw someone getting it to like write Blender scripts.
Oh yeah.
So like, if you want to, you know, add some functionality to like scale up, scale down, like a bunch of entities or meshes in Blender, you could write that script in Python, or you could just ask for what you want and it does it instantly, and it's obviously a lot quicker and bug, like, less bugs and stuff. And I was like, I wonder how good this is for C++. So I'm like, all right, write me like a resizable array.
Yeah.
And it wrote me a, you know, resizable array that I think dealt with integers. And then I was like, all right, let's make this templated so I can use it like with any type. And it did it. And then I'm like, add some comments that like explains what it does. And it added comments to every line of code that explains it. And like, I'm just thinking, I'm like, the thing is, and I read through the code and I'm like, this is good because it's like everyone who goes through like writing a dynamic array for the first time usually makes like, there's a high probability they'll make certain mistakes.
Yeah.
And obviously the AI hasn't done that. Like, there's no memory leaks. It does exactly what it needs. The gotchas are kind of ironed out,
right?
Like, they're not there.
Yeah,
you know, they've handled cases correctly. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, sometimes when humans write code, it's so difficult to think through certain logic kind of problems. And also, what's really important for programming is being aware of context, like, all the time. And the bigger the project you work on, the more context you need to retain in your brain when working on any given system. Because, like, suddenly it's like, for a game engine, you need to know how it functions with other systems. And, like, you know, suddenly, oh, it's a big game engine, is it? Is it support the Nintendo Switch and Xbox and PlayStation? Oh, well, actually, the file system access is different on those platforms. So this part really isn't going to be feasible.
Yeah.
Like, you have to keep stuff at the back of your head. And that the size of what you need to maintain in your memory, you know, grows.
Yeah.
But an AI has no problem with that. And AI can write some code that it ensures handles every case and is compatible with absolutely everything. And it's also the optimal version because it's learned from all these other examples and mistakes.
It's crazy.
Like, that becomes really beneficial. And I think that in a way, like, I don't think it'll replace programmers, but in the same way that, like, you know, we have an IDE that helps us out and a compiler that tells us error messages versus just trying to run a program and it crashes, you know, like, it will become probably a tool that is just, it's just so easy to be like, I don't know, I need to normalize a matrix. Like, why would I have to look up? Because I have to look up, it's not like I'm going to write that from scratch.
Yeah.
I'm going to Google that and then find like some existing code from another library that will normalize a matrix if I'm not using an existing library.
Yeah.
But why not just be like, hey AI, I have a 4x3 matrix or whatever, I want to normalize it. you know, there's my coat. Beautiful.
It would be cool to have like it built into an IDE. And it has it has some sort of understanding of what you're trying to do.
Kind
of,
it is in a way. Isn't that GitHub Copilot in Visual Studio Code?
I think it is, but it's like what I'm trying to say is like if it
just scans through all of your
code, and it genuinely understands what you're trying to build.
Yeah.
And then you start to do stuff, and then it can tell you like just as a reminder, you've already done this in this place, or like this might break this certain thing.
Yeah.
Like just telling you,
if that's like a static analyzer, like static analyzers will go through, but they don't really have context. They look at very narrow scopes, as far as I'm aware, and like they'll kind of just expand macros and do things within one function, but they obviously can't understand your whole system as a whole
and what's coming.
And
as well.
AI could do that. Yeah. That would be a killer tool.
That would be awesome.
Sell for like billions.
But at the same time, why doesn't the AI just do it itself then? At that point,
do everything.
Yeah,
because it doesn't. Like, it's going to have its own mind, so it's not going to know what to build. Like, you're going to still have to tell it, I want to build this product.
Yeah, but then...
It builds the whole product, is what you're saying. Yeah.
There's no reason why not, which is the scary thing.
Not really. I mean, you're going to want, like, to feed in stuff to it, but just in English. Like, for example, my customer wants these features. Add them. Done.
How crazy is that?
Maybe I could get it to, like, add undo redo to Hazel really quickly.
You should do that. That'd be a cool video.
And it does work on Visual Studio, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I should. Does it work in Visual Studio? Yeah, I should make a video that's like, I'm trying to add a feature to Hazel, but I can only use AI. Yeah. I can't manually type any code. Yeah. So even if there's like one little tweak I have to make, now I have to tell the AI to fix that.
Right.
That would be a cool video idea. Yeah.
But the thing is, it seems like programmers are eventually just going to become, as I said, prompt engineers.
Yeah.
Where like the people who really know how to design... Like, the design is the thing I think we will probably still do for the longest time. I don't think forever.
Yeah.
But there'll be a point where we are the designers and we can just type what we want. Mm. And it builds it.
But, like, I think it's really cool because it... You know, yeah, of course you could look at that as a negative thing. But the thing is, what's interesting is that I enjoy programming, obviously. But I don't really think of myself as a programmer. Like, I definitely introduce myself as a software engineer or a programmer.
Yeah.
But I don't really think of myself as a programmer. Like, at the end of the day, I'm building a game engine that lets us make games.
Mm-hmm.
And I write code why? Because that's what needs to happen for me to tell the computer what to do. Right? So, but again, obviously, I do enjoy that part of it. Like, it is fun to me. But that being said, like if that's replaced by AI and I become a prompt engineer, I'm still at the end of the day, like now using AI instead of my own, you know, hands and knowledge to write C++.
More of a game engine designer is what you're saying then.
Kind of. Like, well, I guess like I'm using it as a tool, you know, to achieve something. And I guess, you know, if I really had to expand everything into the long form, I guess what I'm trying to do is I want to be able to make like 3D interactive experiences, you know, games basically. I want to make that, like, that is my form of art,
right?
To tell like stories and to create experiences, right?
Right.
So, you know, and then what I do is I've chosen a somewhat unique path of not using an existing game engine, but that's just my method, you know, as an artist. That's just that's what I've chosen to do. People use different mediums, you know, people can use canvas or oil or watercolor, you know, to create paintings or whatever. Maybe they want to do
game at the end of the day,
a digital artwork. It's just I've chosen the medium of just C++. Let's build the technology to render and create this game myself, you know. But I guess this got a bit long-winded, but what I was trying to say was basically that, like, if I were to become a prompt engineer, then in a way that's like, okay, well, what have I done? I've taken out all of the hours that I spent trying to write code that was that did the right thing that I wanted to achieve. I've taken that out of the puzzle so that now I can focus on the design and focus on like, well, what do I actually want this game engine to do now? How, like, what do I, like, what is the experience I want to provide to game developers using my engine and like my team using Hazel to make the game that we're trying to make? And how do I kind of, like, you know, it's like I've taken that out, so I have all this free time now to actually think about other problems that I want to solve.
The thing is that
in a way, actually, one more thing, in a way, it's like expanding your team. Because if I suddenly stumbled upon millions of dollars, and let's just say I expanded Hazel, the Hazel team and Studio Cherno. Now it's 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Right? In a way, supposing I also hired some really top tier managers who could make those people work together really mm-hmm. well, I've, in a way, it's almost like I have a bit of an AI, because what have I done? Like, I've outsourced the mm-hmm. hours that I spend now, and now people can do it so quickly that, like, what used to take me months can maybe take a team a week.
Right.
And so now I get what I want quicker. Mm-hmm. So that means I can ask for more, I guess, is my point. And
right.
with AI, you can ask for more. You can expand your scope and achieve things that you just wouldn't have had the resources to do previously.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, is by doing that, like, you've set the level of knowledge needed to create something so much lower than it actually is right
yeah.
now. Because...
Which is what, like, Unity did for games, basically.
Like, because most of your... Like, you've obviously sank a lot of time into, like, learning about all of this stuff, right? But a majority of that will have been learning how to program. So, effectively, all that time and knowledge that you have in that area is now almost irrelevant, in a way, if you know what I mean. Because all that you really need to know now is how do the parts of the game engine interact? Like, how do I make this, right? Yep. And so, you've now set the bar for entry so much lower that you're also going to have so many more people doing it, you know? Like, that's the scary thing about that, is that, okay, it does make, like, it makes my job easier, but now what makes me stand out, you know? That's the scary thing.
Well, I guess that's true, because I feel like it's really interesting, because I don't know, like, it's like if athletes... Like, if let's just say tennis players mm-hmm. were suddenly replaced by AI, then it's like the fact that someone doesn't have to have the natural talent to, and also the hard work and dedication to be able to become a professional tennis player and be, you know, I'm going to work harder than that person, or I have better genetics than that person. Like, I'm going to be better than that person. That's something that that person has to strive for. But if they just get replaced with AI... And let's just say you could ask an AI to create a tennis player for you. Then you'd be like, all right, I want the perfect tennis player. Done. Right. So then you have two perfect tennis players. They're playing against each other. They know everything. Mm. They can see the future or whatever. They're like Jedi with the Force or whatever. They can see stuff before it happens. Like, and you get a very boring game. Mm. So, like, it's like the skills. And at that point, obviously, if tennis was replaced by AI, it would kind of be useless. So
and
I feel like...
This is the thing. You mentioning that is like the first time I've heard something and I've been like, oh, you probably couldn't replace that.
Mm.
Because I feel like the difference between that and like a movie, for example, is I feel like when people go to the movies to watch something, they don't really care about how it was made. They don't care about the actors that much. Like, it's more, is this going to give me a good time? And like, if the movie's good, then it does. But with tennis, it's like I feel like you don't go to watch a ball being hit by a racket.
Yeah.
You go... Like, it's intense because you have, like, you might have an emotional connection to one of the players.
It's the preparation and the hard work.
And the hard work. But, yeah, you're 100% right there. Like, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and so I think, in a way, if programming suddenly became very powered by AI, then anyone, of course, could ask for anything and get that. Let's just say it just magically works perfectly. Then suddenly it's like, well, a lot of people are going to ask for the same thing.
Yeah.
And suddenly it doesn't matter how many resources or how talented the people building this are, because it's the AI building it and it's probably the same AI building
it.
So you'd get a lot of like individual things. I think it almost reminds me a little bit of like when Unity like kind of came out with like their marketplace and like the asset store, and then like there were Steam would just pop up with clones of like games that maybe were basically just from the asset store, maybe rebranded a little bit. And you started getting all these Unity games. And there was also, for a long time, I don't know if this is still around, but like, there was always like, people could just tell games were made with Unity because of the way they looked. Like, this just looks like Unity, you know? And it's kind of like, I feel like with AI as well, there would be with low effort AI, because with Unity, of course, you pour enough time into it, no one could ever tell that was made with Unity. Like, Hollow Knight, for example. That might as well have been made with anything.
Yeah.
That looks nothing like anything, because every pixel of that game is basically driven by art and by like hand almost, you know, like they use a bit of like 2D lighting or they layer it in 3D space or whatever, but like that could have been done in any tool. Like, but if it's low effort, it's like it has Unity written all over it. And so I think that like, yeah, with AI as well, like, you know, stuff that is, but the problem is it's different because it is an intelligence.
Yeah.
You could be like, make it like this, but make it unique.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Make it look like, in fact, here's my whole portfolio. This is my style, AI. Make something that looks like I made it.
Boom. And then you're done.
And then you're done. No, yeah, it's pretty scary.
It's so scary.
But again, like, are you sure? Because the problem with AI is that I feel like when people talk about AI like we are right now, mm-hmm. we could just be resorting back to being children and just imagining, like, using our imagination. Like, is this really possible? And is it really where we're at right now? Or are we just envisaging, like, the perfect case for AI?
We definitely are doing that, I think. But what you've also got to remember is, like, how quickly this thing's going to snowball. Like, even if you look at how fast, like, we as a species have just, like, done things in the last, like, 20 years. 20 years ago, you didn't have the iPhone. Like, all the computers were, like, really slow. They couldn't do, you know, what we're doing today.
Yeah.
Like, the amount that technology, like, with VR, all this stuff has happened in 20 years. And now, AI has obviously always been one of those things that we knew was coming. But it's in the future. Like, we're never going to see it, whatever. Yeah. But now we're here. And we've got something that is genuinely, like, doing amazing things that you didn't think would be possible now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, in a year's time, what's it going to look like? I just think we're too, like, we're in over our heads. Like, it's going to go so quick. And that perfect case will come.
Yeah. Well, it's
just,
yeah.
Just when. Anyway, I feel like we could talk about this for...
We definitely could.
Hours.
I think as well that, like... you know, people have, like, Elon Musk, for example. Yeah. I read something about, like, the fact, you know, him, I think, on the Joe Rogan podcast, like, in 2018, he was calling for, like, regulation, I think, for this.
Yeah.
Can you look it up, Jamie/Tim? he was, like, and this was in the news recently, like, I don't know, Elon Musk, like...
Yeah, they did a petition.
On AI regulation, yeah, sure. He's long... Yeah, like, he... Yeah, AI pause. See that first, the one below? Yeah, click on that. Yeah, like he's called for a pause. Like, I think he wanted everyone to take 6 months off research.
Yeah.
To just kind of chill out for a bit.
Yeah.
And be like, guys, we need to think this through.
We need to regulate it. Like, that needs
before
to catch
it takes over the world.
Huh?
Before it takes over the world.
Like, it's crazy because this is the problem. Like, when a new technology emerges, it doesn't, the regulation can't keep up with it. Because it takes so long to regulate anything. Yeah. It takes so long to pass laws, pass bills, whatever. It's like we've not had anything of this sort of danger go through that process yet.
Yeah.
But if they try and regulate it, it's going to take too long because it's going to develop way too quickly.
Yeah.
And I think the thing he was saying, he's like, anything beyond GPT-4 needs to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Just give us 6 months. Let's figure out what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then we'll do this carefully. Which is very true. Like, I 100% am on board with that. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, it's scary. Like, do you think that it will take over the world one day? Like, do you think that...
I honestly have no idea.
It poses a danger to the human race?
I think... I don't know if it poses a danger. It's like... I think we're... The only reason we're even here... This is getting existential now for a podcast about game development, but...
No, let's go for it.
I think eventually, no matter what path we talk... Like, with our intelligence, what we were going to do is raise a new set of things that is much smarter than us. I think that was always destined to happen. Mm. No matter what we do, like, we're going to reach a limit where...
Well, I mean, human race has, I guess, evolved and gotten smarter, right?
Yeah. But, like, we also, like, look at the amount of machines and things we already rely on. Like, eventually, we're going to...
Is that a real headline?
What was that?
San Francisco reverses plans to allow police robots to kill suspects.
Holy...
That's crazy. The robots are making the decisions?
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah.
Is that real? What's the site? The Verge. Yeah.
But I've heard about this where police were going to like have robot squads that would essentially go in. They can't get hurt, you know, like they can't get killed in action.
But they can kill.
But they can kill.
No, but like surely why wouldn't they, like, someone's making the decision behind them.
Tase or use a tranquilizer or something. I don't know. You're like shooting to kill from a robot?
Well, if you imagine someone
in San Francisco, that's crazy. I was going to go to GDC, but I guess not anymore.
In 2016, police used a bomb disposal robot to kill an individual who had shot and killed five police officers.
But they're controlling the robot, right?
Yeah, that one was.
That's like a drone, then. Yeah, that's not.
Yeah, that's all right.
Oh well, actually, God, it's allowed to allow police robots to kill suspects, but I guess robots could just be controlled by humans, not AI. Well, that's a big difference. Yeah, I just interpreted it wrong, I think.
Yeah, no, that'd be crazy. Just like a self.
Just decides to be like, well, this human is not,
They're just driving around the street, just like.
Doesn't meet the metric for allowing it to live, so I'll shoot him.
That's crazy.
That's insane. I wonder if, like, China's putting together a little something.
They've got.
Or North Korea.
Have you seen, like, is TikTok is like. Because all of the Chinese companies are, like, subsidized by the Chinese government. Have you seen TikTok in China? It's like a completely different app.
Oh, really?
They have so...
Oh, yeah, it trains them, doesn't it? It shows them educational content.
It's so much better for you, but also, like, they've recently, like, the parent company, ByteDance, have basically just been, like, every time a new AI startup comes about, they're just buying them. They have so much money.
Damn.
And so they've got all of this technology, like... one of the crazy things is, like, they have, like, skin lightening technology. Because it's seen as beautiful there.
Right.
So, like, they detect, like, skin in the photos and they artificially boost the, the whiteness.
Right, yeah.
And,
right.
Like, it's all these things to make people, like, want to post more because they're getting more...
They like the way they look. Yeah.
Yeah, they look better. Like, they have so much data and training and stuff. Like, they're effectively just an AI company now.
Yeah.
And it's what are they doing behind the scenes? Like,
yeah.
You know?
Nah, that's...
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have TikTok, and I've been kind of hesitant about it.
You shouldn't get it. Like,
But you've been talking about your TikTok
No, posting's
strategy.
Fine. Posting's fine,
okay,
but
right.
I think...
Consuming.
Yeah, and I think I'm all right, because I'm
but
posting
about
education.
Like, allegations or whatever.
It's 2023.
Everything's doing
You
that.
Can't get away from that. Like,
I mean, I guess that's true. But I guess the difference is people are scared because it's China gathering this information. Wasn't it? It was banned in... I think some schools banned it, but also I think some countries have possibly banned it.
I think the US have banned it now.
The US?
Genuinely, yeah.
TikTok?
Yeah.
Completely?
Uh-huh.
Look,
if they haven't, they're close to doing it.
Yeah.
India has banned it. Germany. I think France.
As of April 2023, the app has been banned
by
federal employees.
Oh.
So federal employees and state employees can't use it.
But only 34 out of 50 states, so not everywhere.
But, like, if you think about it, isn't TikTok such a good way to learn basically everything about a culture and a country? Like, you post everything. If you could gather, like, let's just say what, like, everyone in the US is posting on TikTok, feed that through some kind of AI engine and use that as learning data for that to basically learn the habits of just Americans.
Probably.
Like, you basically know everything, and you could even ask the AI, hey, what's their weak spot? Like, hypothetically, if I was to invade, what would I do?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just too... I don't know. I don't have it on my phone just because it's too addicting, and I feel like my attention span just gets worse whenever I have it on my phone.
Yeah.
So I try to stay away from it, like consuming it, which is ironic because I'm posting content for it.
Well,
but...
yeah. But if you use it strictly for business kind of
I feel like I'm.
But is that the way to do it? Because I feel like TikTok's so natural and organic that if you're using it for strictly business use, it's almost like it's not genuine. You know what I mean?
I don't care about the consumption though. Like, I'm more just like using
it as a
marketing
tool. No, you don't have to consume it, but I guess what I mean is, like, it should be more chill. If it's overly produced content, maybe I'm wrong, but I just feel like it's almost like, what was that app?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Lets you take, it was the Casey Neistat app. What was that called?
Vine?
No. I feel like it starts with B.
Oh, I do know what you're talking about, actually.
The bean. Beam, right? Yeah, Beam. BEME. I think that was something about, like, it just, like, takes a photo, but you're not allowed to see it or something. I don't remember. Anyway, yeah, what does it do, Tim? What's its, like, unique feature, I guess?
Design is an alternative to highly edited content found in social media. The app enables users to produce unedited 2 to 8 second videos, which are immediately uploaded and shared with their users.
So it's immediately uploaded, so you can't even look at the video
without the ability to preview.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, like, see, that was kind of
be
like
real.
I think he sold that.
But be real, you can see the photo and you can retake it.
Here, oh, just
you? In which? Where?
I think so. Be real.
Be real.
Yeah.
That one's like you take. Take a photo from the front and the back camera.
Yeah.
And you have to do it at a certain point in the day. Like it prompts you. So you get told at like 6 p.m. like take a photo now, and you have 60 seconds to like get your phone out and
do
it.
Funny.
So it just.
Otherwise, what? It just skips the day, and you're not. Yeah.
So like when you scroll through your friends, it's like, what were they doing? Like, and you can't fake it. You can't be somewhere.
Yeah. That's kind of cool as well. But yeah, with Beam, like it, specifically like didn't allow you to do. You know, you can't edit and you can't like even see what you're filming. So it's kind of like, I guess it's an effort to make it more genuine and less.
It's like the opposite of TikTok.
Well, yeah, I guess TikTok's not like that. But I guess I just saw it as a less. No, but I know that people obviously produce really highly. It's like YouTube Shorts.
You're saying like it should be lower quality.
I almost thought it should be more of a social connection with people, but I think I'm wrong.
It depends.
Because I know that people do overproduce stuff for it as well.
I think it started out like that, like, but because everybody's on it now, like...
What's the limit? Is it 60 seconds?
No, they changed that. It used to be 60 seconds, but now you can upload like any length. But I think most of them are still quite short.
1 hour code review. TikTok.
You fully could. You can do anything on there now. You can do live streams and everything.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty scary AI. All right, do you want to wrap this up?
Yeah.
Give some social. Where can people find you, follow you? What are you promoting?
Wishlist Go Pogo on Steam, and subscribe to Bargy on YouTube.
Links will be in the description below for everyone. Awesome. All right. Thanks for doing this. Yeah, nice to see you around.
Thanks for having me on.
Hope you enjoyed Australia. And see you next time, everyone. Goodbye.
Awesome. Do you guys have a toilet here?
Yes.